From KBIA News in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari. This week, we're revisiting True False and talking with Chelsea McMullen, the director of the documentary Michael Shannon, Michael Shannon John. Here's our conversation with Chelsea McMullen. It's the story of a man who has a family in Canada with an older son named Michael and a younger daughter named Shannon. And then he moves to Thailand and has an older son named Michael and a younger daughter named Shannon. And over the course of this movie, the children from Canada go to Thailand, and then one of them goes to the Philippines to try to understand his murder there. And in the context of all this, they also meet their namesakes, essentially, in Thailand. And the thing that was so amazing to me from the very beginning is you could not fictionally create people who are better characters than the children in this story. I mean, the oldest Michael, the Canadian Michael, is in this rock band and he has this very gothic look to him. And the daughter does set design and produces things for horror films. I guess she's mixing up blood in a bucket in one of the scenes. And they're just very expressive and sort of sensitive characters. How did you meet them?
I went to university with Canadian Shannon. And she had told me about her dad when we were very young. I think I said at the time, like, oh, that would be a really interesting documentary, and didn't think much about it. And at that time, she didn't know that her siblings were named the same. She knew that there were possibly other siblings out there. But she didn't really know very much about them. And then it was only after she was sort of added by herself on Facebook that she was sort of more directly confronted. And it seemed more possible to meet them. And, you know, she saw this kind of version of herself and really kind of that sparked something in her, I think, a desire to really finally kind of find out more about her dad's past.
And there's that moment where she gets a message on Facebook from somebody with her exact name, who is her Thai half-sister. And it's sort of amazing. I mean, it's that whole Facebook phenomenon that suddenly people you would never have known of otherwise are like right there, so immediate to you. How did you get involved in filming this? Because I imagine, I mean, it's complicated to approach anybody about becoming deeply involved in their life, but it's sort of complicated in a different way if you're already friends with them or you already know them.
Yeah, for sure. I've made a couple of films now about friends, and I don't recommend it. I don't know why. I want to stop doing that. But, yeah, she asked me to make the film. We actually hadn't talked in years. And then I guess when she got added by Ty Shannon on Facebook is when she decided she maybe wanted to make a film, and then she approached me about it. So she just messaged me, and I thought we were meeting up for a drink. And then, like, we were having a drink and thought we were just there to catch up. And she, like, told me about what had happened and that she had found these siblings. And, you know, at the time, like, what you said about, like, the Facebook phenomenon, at the time when, you know, we were in university together in our undergrad, it didn't seem that easy to find her siblings. She didn't know their names. She didn't know really anything about them. And then, you know, she kind of pictured this journey she'd make, like finding them in phone books and stuff, like more of a Carmen Sandiego kind of approach. But then, you know, like magic, Facebook comes and all of a sudden the person's just right in front of you. Like, it's so quick and immediate and it's so easy.
And you see so much of their life. You see their mom and their brother and their whole world.
Exactly. So then it, you know, then the film really wasn't about finding them because that was...
They were found.
Yeah, they were found. But yeah, so she asked me if I'd make the film and I kind of was like, can you tell me the story again? And I was scared. I was a bit tentative because she was a friend of mine. But I was also like, it's kind of an incredible gift for someone to offer you this and like choose you to make it. So I was like scared. But at the same time, I was like, I don't feel like I can really turn this down in a way. You have to push your friendship kind of to the brink of breaking anytime you make a film, because if you're not, you're probably not, you know, making anything that's kind of worth making or that's that interesting. So it's tough.
And as you met the people in this film, Shannon's brother, Michael, who I don't know if you had known him from university or not, and the other Michael and the other Shannon,
they all come across as extraordinarily appealing people, you know, like they're really expressive and sympathetic. And every single one of them, when they were introduced, I was like, I would like to be friends with that person. I would like to be friends with that person. Is that coming through your filter that you had this experience with them?
For sure, yeah. And I did know Michael a bit before, not super well. I definitely know him a lot better now before the film. Sorry, Canadian Michael. And then I actually went ahead of Canadian Michael and Shannon and met all of the siblings in Thailand and Toy, their mom. So yeah, I spent about a month with them before anyone even came out. So it was really, it's like a pretty surreal experience to meet somebody's family before they meet them. And then like I couldn't talk, like I wouldn't talk to Shannon about it. And it was really awkward. And yeah, I think that, I just totally fell in love with Ty, Shannon, and Michael. I thought they were amazing. The way Michael speaks is like, we got it translated. Like when we were getting it translated in the moment, it was just really quick, like his interviews. But then when we got it really formally translated, when we got back and really understood what he was saying, like he's like this brilliant linguist. Like
he's very poetic.
Yeah. And I was like, is this like a Ty saying or something? And like the translator's like, no, that's just like how he talks. So I thought, he speaks really poetically. So yeah, they were all super compelling characters, which was really fun to sort of play them all off each other. Like that was like editing them together and each, like sort of setting up each of their characters and trying to get them all finally drawn was like a really, really, it was probably my favorite part of the edit.
You're in Thailand working. It's not where you're from and it's not a language that you speak. So you're having everything interpreted. How did that add another layer to this whole situation?
It was a really interesting experience. We were also there and it was like a little bit unstable. Like the country was a bit unstable right. at that time. There was like a coup. So the government was like pretty intense to try to like film legitimately in the country. Mm-hmm. So that added like another layer of stress. But yeah, I think that the way that it gave me this perspective that I understood how Canadian Michael and Shannon, you know, as best I could, I understood this experience of like trying to communicate with someone but not being able to. And so I think I took that feeling and tried to use that in the film and used translation and mistranslations in the film and even using the subtitles as a way to try to express their experience trying to bridge this gap with these people you want to meet and you want to know so badly and you have so many questions but you can't actually communicate with them.
Yeah, I thought it was very cleverly done in many parts of the film. I loved the scene, even though it was sort of agonizing, where they go out to dinner together. All their intentions are so, so shiningly good, but they can't say anything to each other. And finally, Ty Shannon offers Canadian Michael this sort of fish egg, which he obviously finds weird. But and she and her brother are talking like, oh, we're going to offer it to him. OK, why don't you do it now? They want to make this gesture. And he tries to receive it so well. And you can see all the intentions, but the absolute lack of ability to meaningfully converse.
Yeah, yeah. And the pressure of that, like that being your family. And what does that mean? Like, you know, it's your family and there's always this sort of expectation that it's like, oh, well, we'll just feel like we're a family. And then it's like, no, like, it's just, it's really awkward.
And you're a stranger to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, and you're actually strangers. And it's very strange. And no one really knows the right thing to do. And that's kind of what we were trying to capture with that scene. But yeah, it is, I'm fine with it. I can watch it now. But like the first like 100 times I watched it, I was like, oh.
I also thought the scene was really interesting where Canadian Shannon sits down with Toy, who is Ty Shannon and Ty Michael's mom, and they're having this conversation through an interpreter. And at one point, the interpreter doesn't exactly interpret something correctly, and you can see that in the subtitles. So you can see that real difficulty of communicating. And then you say to them, do you want to take a break? And it's just the interpreter and Toy sitting there together. And they immediately start to have this like really intimate conversation that was almost impossible because of culture and language and things like that between Shannon and Toy. And I was also wondering if you asked yourself, should I use this scene or not? Because they obviously don't think it's part of the movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, we, because we didn't know that was happening either. I mean, they were talking and it seemed kind of intense. So I was like, keep rolling. Mm-hmm. But it was only later when we got back and had it translated where we really realized what was being said. And I think it makes that scene I think, mean more because you kind of realize that Toy's protecting Shannon a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it was really kind of scarred by the experience. And we did question about whether or not to use it, but Toy actually in interviews had actually said those things. So mm-hmm. we didn't feel like it was something that she wasn't willing to say on camera. And the way she said it in this certain situation gave the whole scene kind of more meaning than just having it said in an interview. And, you know, we later showed her and she was fine with it being in there, so that was okay. But definitely we questioned it.
For those of you just tuning in, this is Intersection on KBIA, and we're talking with Chelsea McMullen, the director of the documentary Michael Shannon, Michael Shannon, John, which showed at True False this year. Did you ever worry at any time? Because this is, it's a story about a family, and the crime is almost incidental to the story of the family, but I can totally see this story being recast as a murder mystery. Did you ever worry, am I bringing these people into a dangerous space trying to talk with them about what I assume is an unsolved murder?
It was difficult because I never, ever set out to make a sort of true crime film, and like I was very clear with Shannon from the beginning. She had a lot of interest in finding out more about the murder, and I was totally open to that, but like the focus of the film wasn't that we were going to solve the murder because that didn't interest me. A lot of films do that, and that wasn't something. Like, for me, it was kind of this interest in the family and how do you build a connection with this sort of heavy weight of this kind of behemoth ghost kind of hanging over you. Mm-hmm. So that was always the focus for me. But, of course, you can't not talk about it. It's such a big part of the story. But, yeah, there was definitely times where I felt scared, particularly in the Philippines when we started to get a little deeper into the details of the murder. And you just kind of realize that death is something that, yeah, particularly deaths of foreigners happen kind of all the time there in that underworld of expats. You know, you can sort of definitely, you're sort of poking around in the dark and you know that that is dangerous.
There's a monster in there that might come out.
Yeah, yeah. So we were trying to sort of be balanced in our approach. And when people said, don't ask questions, we didn't ask questions. But there was times where I wondered if we were pushing too far. And we were just kind of trying to gauge by other people how far we could go. I think that Shannon and I had made the decision that we were sort of prepared to do that. It was more like the crew that I was worried about. And, you know, if any of them had sort of been like, I'm kind of done or not willing to go, I think, I would have understood. But, I think we were all so deep into it at the time, too. You get a little bit lost. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's hard to see. It's like we were like pretty deep in that world for a bit. You kind of forget that this isn't sort of a reality, like you can leave.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the one scene that I was looking at was when you went to the house and there's a guy who lived on the corner where the father was shot. And I was like, oh my gosh, if this guy saw this and suddenly people know that he saw it, this could be incredibly dangerous for him.
Yeah.
And it turns out, as he said, he didn't see anything.
Yeah. We sort of just started walking around, knocking on doors, asking if anyone had seen anything and asking people that drove tricycles in the area and stuff. And, yeah, you could just tell by people's faces. A lot of people were like, hell no, I'm not going to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm not sure. I'm not sure why Adrian, the guy, decided to talk to us. I think it was this thing where he had always wondered who that man was and why he had died. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, he had a lot of questions. And I think it clearly was kind of a traumatic experience for him. So in a strange way, there was like some closure for him, too, just like really understanding what he saw.
Yeah.
But that was definitely a concern, though. I feel like, yeah, like you said, he didn't see anything. He only sort of saw the aftermath of it. So I think that's why he sort of felt comfortable talking about it.
And speaking of this sort of underworld, there's so much feeling of that underworld living around the story. And sometimes it becomes dominant or sometimes less dominant. I thought that the video footage that was of John, of the father in the club, and there's these very young girls dancing really provocatively, and they're just all around. It just seemed so tawdry or dark or seamy or seedy. It was obvious that there's like this real undercurrent of like sex and money and the potential of violence going on. How was it to be inside of that?
the way that it's shown is how it felt, mm-hmm. for sure. And it was tough. That was a tough shoot. And it was very, very surreal. Because in that footage, we sort of cut back and forth between sort of the archival footage and the present.
At the end of everything, did you think that Michael and Shannon and Michael and Shannon would stay in touch? How did you think this encounter sort of changed their lives or didn't change it?
I know it changed it. And there's something about Shannon, I'm not even sure she would admit it, but I saw something really drastically change in her from when we went, sorry, Canadian Shannon, from when we went to when we came back. And I think she was really changed by, I think they were all really changed by the experience. And that's great. And I think they really, truly like each other a lot as mm-hmm. people. I think that's like a genuine thing that happens in the film. And I know, like, Canadian Michael hasn't even seen the film and has no desire to see the film.
Wow.
But I know that he loved meeting his siblings, and that was, like, a really important moment in his life, which is kind of amazing to me that, like, he has no, like, I would just be so curious. Like, my curiosity would get the best of me, but, like, that he can just have that experience and leave it at that and mm-hmm. not need to see any sort of documentation of it. But, you know, of course, with the film, there's this sort of added bonus of having a translator with you all the time,
right.
which we wanted to sort of play with in the film language. But I don't know if you can pay every time to have a translator come with you when you meet your siblings. So, like, I think to some extent there's only so much their relationship can evolve unless somebody learns another language.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that they'll see each other again. Like, I think that this wasn't like, okay, that's done, I'll forget about them. And I know they've stayed in touch as much as they can sort of on Facebook, but I think they'll connect again sometime in the future. That's my sense.
It was interesting to see the siblings because the Thai siblings, the connection between them is very visible. They always like to be close to each other, or like their shoulders are leaning against mm-hmm. one another. They're very affectionate. And the Canadian siblings are a little more distant. Do you yeah. know, you can really see the sort of cultural differences in their relationships. And when the Thai siblings come out of the house, I think they wanted to hug them.
Yeah.
And then they're like, let's shake hands instead, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty funny. I mean, we tried to play up this idea of these sort of parallel lives, and it's kind of fun to imagine how much of it is genetics and, you know, how much are they alike and how much are they different, and how much is like nature versus nurture, and all those things are kind of fun to think about. And especially when you kind of see these four people that, you know, have the same dad but grew up in totally different environments. But we tried to play with that kind of visually in the film, contrasting them. That's the way we kind of, you know, film these very formal shots of them together and, mm-hmm. you know, really try to viscerally capture what it's like to sort of be in Canada, what it sounds like, what it feels like versus Thailand.
And Canada is very snowy and Thailand is very hot.
Yeah, we definitely, I mean, yeah, we shot that in winter intentionally
mm-hmm.
to sort of push that that comparison, but at the same time, that's like absolutely Canadian winter. I'm in it right now. I like flew out in a snowstorm, so it's not like an exaggeration of how it feels.
How many films did you make before this?
This is my second feature film, and I've made like a million short films. 1 million. I've made a bunch of short work, but this was my second long form.
This is Intersection on KBIA, and we're talking with Chelsea McMullen, the director of Michael Shannon, Michael Shannon John, which showed at True False this year. And it takes money to make a film, especially a feature film, especially a film that involves extensive travel and interpreters. How do you fund this?
We're really lucky. Our broadcaster is Super Channel. I think they have Super Channel in the States. I'm not sure. But they came on board as sort of our lead broadcaster. And then Canada, in Canada, there's like a lot of government support for documentaries. So we were sort of able to fill the budget out with funds and tax credits, blah, blah, blah.
What film would you like to make next? Is there something else in the works?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, like, I made these films, my two feature films, really back-to-back. Like, they actually overlapped. So I was kind of finishing one and starting the other. And that was, like, the last 7 years of my life. So I'm, like, so burnt out after.
And you're young. You're 30?
Yeah, I'm 31.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. So I kind of decided that I would kind of take a step back and just really think about what exactly it is that I want to do next. So I'm kind of in development on a bunch of projects, so we'll see what goes ahead. But I'm like kind of at that stage where I'm a little bit scared to talk about them because I'm like a little bit excited, but don't want to be like, I'm doing this next for
That's
sure.
All right.
And then
don't
it like doesn't
it.
doesn't happen. Yeah. And then I'm embarrassed. But I have lots in the works.
And so did you work on this film for 3.5 years?
Yes, I did. Absolutely.
What is it like to see it and then take it around? I mean, that's such an investment of your life and your vision and your time, and you must have lived inside this film for so long to then see it through other people's eyes. How does it feel?
It's so strange. I mean, it almost feels like a bit of an out-of-body experience. Like, it's kind of dissociative. Like, I was watching it last night, and I didn't feel like I had made it. I was, like, watching it, like, with an audience, and I was like, oh, what's this film? Like, I just, like, at a certain point, it stops being yours in a way, and it becomes its own thing. But, yeah, and I take, like, a notoriously long edit. Like, I think we edited it for, like, 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen it so many times that it's like I haven't seen it anymore or something. I don't know. It's hard to explain. At a certain point, it just stops. You work on every tiny detail down to, like, the most, like to minutia. And then it's like, you know, are the subtitles, do they have enough drop shadow on them kind of stuff? and then you just got to, like, then it's like a child and it walks on its own and it moves into the world and it's kind of not yours anymore. It's other people's. So that's how I feel about it.
That's really cool. And these are two complete non sequiturs, but I love the opening shot of the palm tree.
Thank you.
Because they're so textural and they make so much noise and they reflect light in all these ways. How did you choose that?
I am obsessed with palm trees, like obsessed. I have been for a while. I've actually considered making a documentary about palm trees called Palm Palm, and which is like the best title. I don't want to brag, but I'm kind of good at titles. So anyways, I actually had that idea that would be the opening shot for the film for a while. A palm tree, we just had to find the right one. So we were filming palm trees anytime I saw a great palm tree. Because for me, the palm tree, from like a Western perspective, it represents exoticism.
Yes.
And I think in a way that was kind of something that John was after. But in another way, I also feel like the tree is John in the beginning. Like it's this big, dark kind of ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And our composer saw it that way too, and she wrote the music so that she said, like, she wrote it to be, like, his soul. In a way, it's, yeah, sort of supposed to represent this kind of Western perspective, but and then also, like, be his ghost kind of at the beginning of the film, hanging over the film.
And then there's a scene about midway when we're really starting to engage with the concept of this violence under the surface that's of roosters fighting, and they have razors strapped to their feet. And I mean, I'm sure many of us eat chicken and we're like, yeah, I'm chicken. But to see two animals kill each other in that way is just, it's pretty gruesome. I mean,
yeah,
it's pretty visceral. How was it to film that scene? And also that was an incredibly masculine space. I don't think there were any women that I saw in the audience. How was it to go into that space?
You know, when you're actually there, it's a lot more benign. I mean, we cut it like intentionally, like my editor, Avril Jacobson, she watched like Face Off and a lot of like John Woo films, and we cut it intentionally like an action film.
Mm.
And we shot it slow motion. We shot it in a way that, like, so, you know, when you're actually kind of watching it, like, not in slow motion, it's quite benign.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just, like, happens really fast. You're like, did it die? Is it dead? Like,
uh-huh.
So we intentionally amped that up because the point of that scene was when people are describing John's murder, that they always described it like it was an action film. Like, everyone, that's something that I noticed. It was, like, consistent that people, like, kind of, like, really liked to emphasize the details of the violence and
like
him.
He threw his girlfriend off the back of the bike and drove into the gunfire.
Exactly. So it was like, oh, how do we visually represent this idea that it's kind of like this action film without it like having to get the rights to like an actual action film or something? So yeah, and then I noticed like there's definitely like cockfighting is everywhere in the Philippines. So, you know, it's a really important cultural sport for them. But yeah, I know it's a difficult scene for some people to stomach. But at the same time, it felt motivated. Like it felt like we weren't just being like, look at these animals dying. Mm-hmm. That it was in there for a reason. And what you were saying about the masculine space was really important too, because that's another thing we were trying to represent, is like so much of what happens in these sort of expat communities is about this, like, you know, trying to maintain this like hyper masculine version of themselves. With men that, you know, especially in maybe some of the Western countries that they're from, where they feel emasculated. So that was like an important part of the film, is like these roosters' cocks. Like, it doesn't get more masculine than that.
And is there anything else we should know that we haven't touched on?
I mean, one thing that you don't know is that there's another sibling that we didn't use in the film, mostly for ethical reasons. He's very young, and he doesn't know that his father isn't his father. So we sort of went back and forth about how, whether or not we should include it. And at the end of the day, we felt like ethically it was a bit funny to, like, you know, someone who doesn't know that they're in a film. His name is also John.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
that's something you don't know. That's not sort of addressed in the film, because in the end, we had sort of some versions where we touch on it, but it didn't feel like it went far enough, and then to go far enough felt in territory we weren't comfortable with, so in the end we cut it.
That was Chelsea McMullen, the director of the documentary Michael Shannon, Michael Shannon John, which showed at this year's True False Film Fest. Thank you for spending your time with us here at Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I want to thank our producers, Katie Eisterhold, Carlo Canta, and Amanda Beiler. And of course, thank you to our guest, Chelsea McMullen. Our music is Montana Skies. We also have some good news to share. Intersection will now air at our regular time, which is 6:30 on Monday evenings, and again on Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. So if you miss us Monday, just tune in Wednesday at 11 a.m. I'm Sarah Shariari for Intersection, right here on KBIA 91.3 FM.